This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Plastic Surgery Information Channel. Make sure you connect with us on our various social media channels, such as Facebook, Google+, and Twitter, to follow our programming accordingly. We are also streaming on demand 24/7 on TuneIn Radio and the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. Today we are speaking with, once again, Dr. Jay Dutton, who is double board certified in both otolaryngology and facial plastic and reconstructive surgery. He specializes in rhinoplasty at the Rhinoplasty Institute of Chicago, Illinois, and is here to talk to us about grafts, implants, and injectables in rhinoplasty. Dr. Dutton, welcome back to eHealth Radio.
Thanks a lot for having me back again, Eric.
You're more than welcome. The pleasure is certainly ours. So, for starters, what types of grafts and implants are generally available in plastic surgery?
Well, in broad terms, grafts and implants can be divided into how similar they are genetically and with respect to your immune system to the person receiving the graft. So there's really four very broad categories. The first one would be an autograft, or a graft coming from one's own body. So examples in rhinoplasty would be like taking cartilage from your own nose, such as the nasal septum or possibly the ear or rib, taking bone from your skull or a hip bone, or using fascia, which is the soft tissue that envelops the muscles. The next category would be an allograft, which is a graft that comes from the same species, but not from yourself specifically, so not genetically identical. This is the common organ implants that people think of: liver implants, heart transplants, kidney transplants. Those are all allografts. I'm not aware of any actual nose transplants yet. We might be getting closer with some of these facial transplants, but in rhinoplasty, the two main allografts that I'm aware of would be using irradiated rib cartilage from a cadaver, or alloderm, which is actually part of the human skin. So it's donated human dermis. The dermis is a deeper layer of the skin, and it's taken from cadavers and processed so that it removes all the cells while preserving the essential biologic components and the structure of the dermal matrix to help support regeneration. The third category would be a xenograft. It's spelled with an X, xenograft, which is a graft from a different species. So if I were to take a monkey nose and put it on you, that would be a xenograft. And then finally, the alloplast, which is a synthetic or foreign material. And those can be subdivided into the metals, like gold, platinum, stainless steel, or titanium, which is very commonly, the most commonly used one. If you fracture your arm, for example, they're going to use titanium plates and screws, most likely. And then the second type of alloplast would be polymers, which are large molecules, macromolecules that are composed of repeating subunits, if you look at their chemistry. So examples of two common ones we might see here in Chicago are really in Chicago where I live here is ones you might see at the hottest and coldest days of the year. So we're probably all aware of examples of silicone implantation, that we'll see examples of this at the beach. Silicone is a polymer that consists of alternating elements of the chemical elements silicon and oxygen, along with some side groups. Conversely, here in Chicago, in the coldest days, we probably won't appreciate that, but we'll see examples of the silicone implants being hidden behind expanded polytetrafluoroethylene, or Gore-Tex, commonly known as. So all these Gore-Tex jackets are polytetrafluoroethylene. This material, in addition to keeping warm, also makes one of the better implant materials for soft tissues. It's very commonly used in vascular surgery, like to repair major blood vessels. But it can be used in the soft tissues of the body, and specifically the face, such as the lips or a paralyzed face. And certain rhinoplasty surgeons will use them occasionally. That's pretty much it on that subject.
And covered very thoroughly, I might add. Now, what types of grafts or implants are involved in rhinoplasty specifically?
Well, if we go back to the outline we just created, the autographs, again, meaning it comes from yourself, this is absolutely the gold standard for grafts in rhinoplasty. So types of autografts for a primary rhinoplasty, or if it's your first rhinoplasty ever, would be usually just from the nasal septum. The inside of the nose has enough cartilage that you can use. If you've had a prior surgery, though, making it a second rhinoplasty and the surgeon's revising it, there may not be enough of that cartilage left, and they might have to go to another site, such as the ear, which that's an auricular cartilage graft. That's a nice site because it's fairly close to the nose. It's already in the field we're working in. It's easy to obtain. It's not super painful, but there's really limited amounts you can take. As you can picture with your ear, it's very curvy and it's a bit more thin, so it's a little less resistant to scar contracture when you heal. A second very good source is that of rib cartilage. Okay, so that's a great source. You can get large amounts of it. It's very robust cartilage that resists scar more. Most of it's straight, which can make it easier to work with. But the disadvantages are it's at a distant site, so you have to prep a separate site, so it's a little more of a pain during the surgery. It can be more painful to the patient just because that's a sensitive area, and you're working close to the lung, so it doesn't typically happen, but there is a risk of puncturing the lining or causing a pneumothorax. And then a third type for rhinoplasty, a third type of autograft would be to use bone, like split bone from the skull or from the hip or somewhere. And that can be a decent option, but it's so hard. It doesn't have, sometimes the consistency is too rigid compared to cartilage. The other types of implants in rhinoplasty, among the allografts, again, some people will use a radiated rib. It's irradiated to reduce the risk of infection and to reduce the immunogenicity, so you don't have to take immunosuppressant drugs like if you had a transplant or something. It's not readily available everywhere or even most places, and I have very little experience with it personally. A second type of allograft would be Alloderm, which is very common. It's commercially available, and it's nice for when you need soft coverage, not firm. So it's a very soft material. So if you're fixing like a hole in the septum, which is a septal perforation, Alloderm is a good example. And then among the alloplasts, the most common types I allude to would be the Gore-Tex or Silastic type implants. The advantages of those compared to the autografts are that you don't have a donor site morbidity, so there's not like a second incision made. It's prefabricated into the precise shapes that you may want, so might reduce surgeon's error and certainly reduce their OR time. They don't have to spend time on the back table kind of whittling away a cartilage or bone until you get it just right. But the disadvantages are it's a foreign material, and so the body's going to recognize it as a foreign material. So short term, it may carry a much higher risk of infection or exposure of the implant requiring removal. Long term, the body may start to mount an immune reaction to it that can take months or years that can cause some very bad side effects in the tissues in certain cases, which are, these tissues are recognizing it as a foreign material and trying essentially to eliminate it.
What are some factors to consider in selecting a graft or implant? Touch on that if you would.
Well, there's a few factors. I think far and away the most important one is biocompatibility. So essentially the closer the implant is to your own body's makeup and your own genetic makeup, the less likely your body is to mount an immune reaction and reject it. That's why whenever it's feasible, with respect to rhinoplasty at least, native is always better. Always stick with your own tissues if the surgeon can do it. You might have to tolerate a little more discomfort and a small scar from the donor site, but that's certainly better than having your body mount a major reaction at perhaps the most visible site in your body, in the middle of your face. Other factors to consider, just like in real estate, location, location, location. So an implant that's suitable in the breast may not be suitable in the nose. The tissues are different. The qualities of them are different. Silicone implants are FDA approved in the breast and may be just fine these days, but you don't ever let someone come at your nose with silicone injectables, for example, because that could be disastrous. It'll end up looking like, God bless his soul, Michael Jackson. Likewise, you might consider something around the nasal bone that you wouldn't use on a tip, for example. Other important things to consider, the consistency of the material. So depending on how firm or soft an agent is, it might have more applications on the inside of the nose or the outside or different portions of the nose. And then other final variables would be, or final things to consider would be the durability of the implant, the cost, and the type of rhinoplasty, whether it's the first time you've had one or whether it's a revision that can affect it.
Today, once again, we are with Dr. Jay Dutton, a double board certified in both otolaryngology and facial plastic and reconstructive surgery, and specializing in rhinoplasty at the Rhinoplasty Institute of Chicago here on eHealth Radio's Plastic Surgery Information Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Dr. Dutton, what injectables are used in performing non-surgical rhinoplasty, and which one should a patient consider and which should they avoid?
Well, first off, I know that the term has gotten very popular and it's marketed a lot. I don't personally really like the term non-surgical rhinoplasty. If you're introducing a foreign material into the nose, there's a certain recovery, even if it's small. There's a physical change occurring. And believe it or not, the risks of those injectables could turn out to be devastatingly worse than true surgery. And I'll go into that in a little bit more. With that disclaimer said, and kind of following our earlier outline, one could consider the main autogenous material would be fat. So you can take fat from somewhere else in your body, like your belly, and spin it down in a centrifuge in a sterile fashion, and then re-inject the cells through a needle into areas of your nose. The advantage is it's your own tissue again, so there's less risk of rejection. The disadvantages are that unlike the outside of your nose, if you feel that's a relatively hard structure, this is a soft material, so the consistency is going to seem unnatural. It offers no support to prevent collapse or to help your breathing. It can go in lumpy. Fat's a little lumpy by nature, and even if it doesn't, the survival of the fat cells can vary from case to case or surgeon to surgeon. So even if it does seem smooth initially, if some of the fat cells don't survive, then it could end up seeming lumpy later on. Finally, for reasons that are not entirely clear, it's actually the agent that causes some of the highest number of major complications when injected in the nose or in the areas around the nose. Of the alloplastic injectables around the nose, the first would be hyaluronic acid. That's what's present in Restylane and Juvederm, for example. And if you are going to inject in this area, that's probably the best choice. Hyaluronic acid is a polysaccharide, so a type of sugar that's naturally in all mammalian connective tissue. So we all have it. It's produced when a bacteria called Streptococcus is used to create it and synthesize it. And it doesn't cause allergic reactions. That would be extremely rare. So unlike when we first started out with collagen, you don't even have to do immune tests to it up front. You can just take it out of the box and use it. As mentioned, it's common in injectables like Restylane and Juvederm, and depending on how it's cross-linked, it can be made to be more or less viscous, so thicker or less thicker. And as such, the amounts of time that it'll last can vary from 6 to 24 months, and so that could be changed. It's not permanent, which is a disadvantage. As far as disadvantages, as mentioned, it's not permanent, and it should be noted it is not FDA approved for use in rhinoplasty. None of the injectable agents are. It's temporary, so it's not permanent, and you have to keep coming back every once in a while to do it. It's pretty smooth, but it can go in lumpy, and if you don't get it in just right, it can be noticeable. And if it's superficial to the skin, not only can you kind of tell that it's a little lumpy, it can potentially cause a blue tinge discoloration. While rare with this agent, it can cause granulomas, which are like tiny little balls of reactive tissue under the skin. It doesn't really offer any support for breathing or the overall structure of the nose like true grafts do. And it's rare, but cases have been reported where is accidentally injected into tiny little blood vessels deep in the nose that the surgeon, you know, to his credit, can't see. But if he accidentally injects into one, it can get into the blood system and cause death of the skin in that area, causing scar tissue or scarring, or even rarely blindness if it goes from those vessels to the ones around the eye. So you have to be extremely careful with this. Other types of alloplastic injectables used less commonly would be like hydroxyapatite, which is present in radius, and that's little calcium spheres and sort of a water-based carrier. Its main advantage is that it lasts longer, but the disadvantages are that it much more commonly causes a very significant reaction to tissue. Tissues in these little granulomas that I mentioned earlier are more common with this. It may not be noticeable if that happens in real deep tissues, but if you're using it in areas with real thin skin, like around the nose, I think it's a terrible idea. A third type of alloplastic injectable would be silicone, which was used much more common decades ago. Simply put, do not do this. While the FDA considers it safe to use in the confines of a breast implant, so it's basically separated from the tissues by the bag that holds it, there's no such option for the nose. So when people used to inject the silicone directly under the skin, and it almost uniformly caused a severe foreign body reaction, and oftentimes not for many years later. I recently helped a man who had a huge mass on the side of his nose. We weren't sure why, but he'd had a rhinoplasty in another country 20 years ago. And essentially, this is what we believe happened, and the mass came back. So he had to actually have two surgeries. So it can be very deforming, and when removed, it's a pretty big surgery. Again, it's an awful idea in the nose to use silicone.
Great information. And lastly, what risk and or complications are involved with injection rhinoplasty?
Yeah, briefly. I mean, many of them I mentioned above, but they can include, from minor complications like bruising and swelling at the injection site up to more major complications. We mentioned the bluish discoloration in that area, the need to have repeated injections. Irregularities are more noticeable than those because it's right there in the middle of your face. They can cause granulomas. We mentioned the skin necrosis or death, resulting in small death of the skin, not the patient, but that would result in small or large areas of the nose causing severe scarring. We mentioned visual loss, and it is very rare, but if it gets into the blood vessels that go towards the brain, a stroke or mental status changes. Sounds appealing, right? Really, there may be a role for these injection rhinoplasties in a very small number and potentially a bigger number down the road, but I just wouldn't let the term non-surgical fool you. These type of injections can cause complications that are even more severe than the very effective surgical rhinoplasties they're attempting to replace.
Well, Dr. Dutton, it certainly has been our pleasure to have had you, and thanks for the thorough coverage on grafts, implants, and injectables in rhinoplasty today. Where can listeners find your practice online and get more information as well as to be in touch accordingly?
Yeah, the listeners can find us at www.rhinochicago. So it's one word, rhinochicago.com.
Once again, we thank you for your time today, and thanks for joining us on eHealth Radio. Certainly look forward to our next conversation.
Great. Thanks again, Eric.
And you're more than welcome. We have been speaking with Dr. Jay Dutton, a double board certified in both otolaryngology and facial plastic and reconstructive surgery, specializing in rhinoplasty at the Rhinoplasty Institute of Chicago. And for more information and for contact, simply visit rhinochicago.com. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Plastic Surgery Information Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. And we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.